time again, you see young, promising athletes come out of college and into the pros only to bomb. They were ripe with superhuman athletic ability, but they just couldn't cut it at the professional level. Then there are those who aren't superstars before they reach the professional level, and they become some of the top-rated athletes. They become superstars. What is the difference? Why do the truly gifted not always make it when they are put to the test? What separates them from those who might not have the same skill level, but somehow manage to take themselves to the next level? Mental toughness is what separates the superstar from merely good. To talk about this very important asset, I asked Steve Siebold to stop by. Steve has been studying and interviewing world-class performers since 1984. He's the author of the book, 177 Mental Toughness Secrets of the World Class, and he speaks to and trains teams worldwide to build their mental toughness to the world-class level. Steve, welcome to success. Let's talk toughness today.
All right. Thanks, Darren.
So, Steve, let's start with the obvious question. Tell us, from your vantage point, exactly what is mental toughness?
Well, mental toughness really is the ability to control your emotions, especially in pressure situations, and to know when to use emotion to drive you and when to use logic to steer your direction.
So before we go deeper into conversation about what constitutes mental toughness, share an example of someone you feel exudes this mental toughness and why.
Well, there's so many examples. I mean, if you look at famous people that everyone listening to this would know, you have to look at Tiger Woods. I mean, Tiger Woods is one of the most mentally tough athletes in the history of sports. I mean, Lance Armstrong's another one. Michael Phelps would be another one. In business, we could look at your cover story from this month, Jack Welch, a really mentally tough guy in corporate America. You could look at history and say Martin Luther King was a mentally tough man, and so many other great examples out there.
So Woods, Phelps, what do they do? So we can point to them, but what is it that they do that not just their results and their outcome, but what is the process that they do to reinforce this mental toughness? What are some of their practice behaviors? How do we know that it is their mental toughness that is the separating factor?
That's a great question. What you see is the ability to concentrate, focus, and manipulate their attention and their emotions, especially in pressure situations. You know, whether it's Jack Welch turning around a GE or it's Tiger Woods making a 6-foot putt to win a tournament, they're able to lock in their total concentration onto what they're doing and block out effectively everything else on the outside. And that's what makes them so incredibly mentally tough.
I like the words they know how to manipulate their emotions and their attention, which means that you have a proactive effort in it. You know, you are the maestro behind it. Sometimes I think mental toughness is like you're subject to the outside manipulating you, whereas you're saying you have learned to manipulate your own emotions and your own attention. Now, let's try to make this more tangible. You have a mental toughness formula that breaks it all down into individual pieces for people to achieve world-class success. So share that formula with us and how we can start to use it.
The formula I created years ago was D plus V plus P must be greater than C. And it breaks down to dissatisfaction plus vision plus process must be greater than cost. So dissatisfaction is really just effectively means that the performer has to be somewhat, if not very, dissatisfied with their current level of results. So they've got to be dissatisfied. If someone's not dissatisfied, they don't really care about mental toughness. It doesn't mean anything to them. A vision, they've got to know what they want exactly in detail with an emotional driver behind it. Process just means they need the tools, the mental toughness tools to be able to get into this state of heightened focus. And greater than cost means the cost, the price the performer must pay to put all these things together.
You know, I like the word dissatisfaction because you could have used goal, right? Something they want, some ambition, but sometimes I think goals are weak because they're not forced to take action. You know, if I don't get it, you know, so what? Life's okay otherwise, but I like turning it into a dissatisfaction. So somebody who doesn't immediately have a dissatisfaction, how can they at least generate that feeling of dissatisfaction that might ignite them forward a little bit? What would you suggest there?
Well, that's a great question, and it's one I don't get very often, but it's really a worthy question, and it's what we do with corporate sales teams in some of the biggest companies in the world. What we do is we call it probing for dissatisfaction, and the example we use, Darren, is we say it's like when you go to the dentist for a cleaning, and everything seems to be fine. Your teeth don't hurt. You're just getting them cleaned, and they use that tool, whatever that tool is, where they're sort of picking at your teeth, and it's just, you know, it's nothing's really hurting at all until, boom, they hit something. And all of a sudden you jump 3 feet out of the seat and they found something. And what they're doing is they're probing for problems. They're probing for problems in your, you know, with your teeth. And that's what we do with dissatisfaction. We say, you know, when people say, no, I'm really satisfied. I make a good income. I'm satisfied with my health and my relationships and everything else. And we say, are you sure? When you say you're satisfied, what do you really mean? Do you mean that you're really, truly content? Or do you mean that you really don't believe you have what it takes to get what you really want? That's an example of a critical thinking question we use to probe dissatisfaction.
So take this formula and make it more concrete for us. Where do you see the formula for mental toughness being used in our everyday lives? Give us a few examples to jumpstart the ideas inside our own mind about how we can apply this formula to ourselves.
Okay, let's say someone wants to raise their income. Let's say they want to double their income. They're making $50,000 a year. They want to make 100. Let's just say that's a really big goal, obviously, to double your income. So we'd say put your desire that we think is a desire, at least. Okay, let's put it through the formula. So how dissatisfied are you with making the 50,000? If the person says, well, I'm not really sure, we say use a 1 to 7 scale, which is the traditional psychological scale, 1 being the weakest and 7 being the strongest. So on a scale of 1 to 7, 7 being strongest, how dissatisfied are you with your $50,000 a year income? And if they don't score at least a 5, we say you're not truly dissatisfied. This is just a wish or something you hope will fall out of the sky, but you're not truly dissatisfied. Now, on the other hand, if they say, well, I'm a 5 or a 6 or a 7, we say, okay, you are amply dissatisfied to move to the next level, which is vision. Okay, what is the vision? Why is it that you want to make the $100,000 a year as opposed to the 50? What is it that you're going to do with it? Buy with it? Is it security? Is it status? Is it a new home? What is it that you want it for? What is the vision? So how clear is the vision? On a 1 to 7 scale, 7 being most clear, 1 being least clear. And again, if they don't score at least a 5, we say you don't have a clear enough vision. You're going to either have to clarify the vision or drop the goal completely. Let's say they pass 5, 6, 7. So we say, okay, you've passed the next process. Now let's go into the process part. What mental toughness tools do you have to get to the next level? Because we know through research, through statistics, through surveys, through analysis, that the thinking that got you to $50,000 a year will not get you to $100,000. Because if you were thinking $100,000 thoughts, you'd be getting $100,000 pay. And that's obviously, there's lots of research to back that up. So what are the processes that are going to help you change your consciousness, change the way you think about your job, about your business, about money, about all the things that surround that goal? If you've got the processes, we say that you can move to the next level. If you don't, you have to create them. And of course, that's what I write and talk about all the time to help people with the mental toughness tools. But let's say they pass and then they say, okay, we add these things up. Dissatisfaction plus vision plus process must be greater than the price, the cost, we say, or the price, basically, that you have to pay to do this. This is going to take change. It's going to take effort. It's going to take energy. Are you willing to pay the price? 7 being absolutely, 1 being no. Do you score at least a 5, 6, or 7? If they score 5, 6, or 7, we say you're on your way. And if they score below a 5, we say you're kidding yourself. You're delusional. Don't dream something that has nothing behind it.
What do you mean price? You mean you can't just sit on your couch and imagine checks coming into your mailbox? Really?
It turns out you can't. Yeah, wow. I've tried it, Darren. It just doesn't work. I keep trying, but nothing comes in.
So that leads me to this question here. So I'm going to go through a few of these secrets to mental toughness from your book. Number 29. The great ones are masters of their work and rest cycles. Okay, something that I believe in wholeheartedly. We've had Tony Schwartz here, who also is a big believer in that as well. Explain how working and living based on cycles is the best for our efforts to be like the champions of the world.
Yeah, and I'm a fan of Tony Schwartz as well, and I agree with his philosophy, so I'll probably say the same things or some of them that he says, Darren. And I think that when I've worked with number one players in the world in sports, so that's where I started with in the mental toughness process almost 30 years ago. what the biggest thing people would, you know, the number one question I would get is, what do you do with a number one, an athlete's number one in the world? What you do is you try to keep them from not burning out, as a mental toughness coach anyway. You try to keep them from not practicing every single day or over practicing or over training, because of course that's what makes them great, but that's also what burns them out. So we say that there's got to be an appropriate amount of rest, you know, in relation to an appropriate amount of effort. And that balance is critical if you're going to get world-class results. Most people don't worry about it because they're not after world-class results. I think because they don't believe they can actually achieve it. They can, but they don't believe they can. But when you're on that path, you've got to be very careful that you don't burn out. Burnout's a very costly thing, and it takes a lot of time to recover from.
So let's say that everybody listening, which I imagine that they are, if they're listening to this, they want to be world class. Okay. So let's say that they do. And let's just go through a typical work week. So what is the proper work rest ratios? Let's say they do something intense for a 90 minute cycle. What's the needed rest? And let's say that they go at it 8-10 hours of through the day. What's the adequate rest? They go at it 5-6 days through the week. What's the adequate rest? Just give a framework for this so that people listening can go, oh, okay, I get it.
Sure, it really has to be a custom fit for each individual person. But that being said, generally speaking, what we say is the point where you get mentally, where when you reach the point of not being able to be creative, either creative in your thoughts in terms of strategy, again, whether it's a business strategy or you're a golfer or some kind of an athlete or anything else, when your creativity starts breaking down because your mind is overwhelmed, your mind is exhausted, your emotions are exhausted, that's when it's time to make sure that you rest before you hit the burnout stage. Because if you hit the burnout stage, it could take weeks and months to recover. Now, you might keep showing up at the job, or you might keep showing up on the golf course or the court or whatever it is, or in the boardroom. You may show up physically, but mentally you won't be 100%. And that's why the rest cycles are key. I think monitoring and knowing yourself is probably the most important skill you can develop in this particular mental toughness tool.
All right. So give us a little insight to your own mental toughness. This always sort of helps those listening see it for themselves a little bit better. Tell us what you do to stay mentally tough no matter what.
Well, I think it's a matter of deciding what you want. I mean, I think so many people, and I've fallen into this trap, all the traps, of course, as we all do all the time on a regular basis. But I think so many of us want so many things half-heartedly that we never really decide on what we really, really desire, what we really want. So we kind of put some energy over here and some energy over there. And the number one thing I think, Darren, is deciding what it is that you want to the exclusion of everything else. If you want something else 6 months from now, then you focus on that. But what is the number one thing you want, whether it's to make the putt or to make the $1 million or to double your income or to be, you know, to lose weight, whatever it is. And then you focus all your mental energy, everything you can possibly focus on that one end. And I think that's what creates mental toughness and incredible results for people.
So we've talked about what mentally tough people do. What about the things that they should avoid? Talk about a few things that mentally strong individuals don't or won't do.
Okay, I would say the number one thing I've found, and after interviewing all these great performers since 1984, is if you want to make whatever the goal is, find people, a group to associate with that are successful. You know, I was on ABC the other day talking about, in Dallas, talking about my book, Fat Loser, which is my newest book. And it's, of course, about, it's mental toughness training for dieters. And I said, look, if you want to get fit, stop hanging around fat people. If you want to get rich, start hanging around rich people. And I get this hate mail from all over the world. And people say, well, are you telling me I can't hang around my fat friends or my fat family? And I said, no, I'm not telling you can't do something. And I'm not telling you're better than them or fit people are better than them. What I'm suggesting is, what Einstein said, it's not my idea, it's far beyond my scope, but what Einstein said years ago, consciousness is contagious. If you want to win, get around people who know how to win, and you'll absorb that energy, you'll absorb those ideas and those thoughts, and you'll start winning in whatever area it is. And it's not about blocking out the average person in your life. I'm not saying push them out of your life. I'm saying that 97% of the people in the richest country in the world are losing. And they're not losing because they're not smart enough or talented enough. They're losing because they don't understand the principles of mental toughness. And one of which is to get around the 3% who are winning in any area of life. It's a tough message for people, but I'll tell you, it makes a big difference. And I know you know that.
And I wholeheartedly agree. Jim Rohn would just say you become the combined average of the five people you hang around the most. And I like the way you explain it through Einstein, which is consciousness is contagious in ways we don't even know. Influence of associations is powerful and subtle and a lot of times deceptive. And we absorb the habits, the behaviors, the mindsets, the attitudes, the mental state, weakness or toughness of those that we hang around the most. So then let's start looking at ways to work on our mental toughness like a skill. Help us increase the good habits. Give us two or three mental toughness habits that we should incorporate into our everyday lives to be the champions we know we can be.
Start looking at your performance and the different areas of your life that you care about, whether it's your relationships or your finances or your health or, you know, whatever it is. Start looking through the lens of objective reality, which is devoid of emotion. It's basically critical thinking on yourself, on your results, and say, hey, if I'm not getting a raise, if I haven't gotten a raise in 5 years, is it because my boss is ignoring me, or is it because my performance is not worthy of a raise? You know, am I not making more money because the market, the economy is bad, or is it my service to my customer base that's substandard? And I think that's hard for people to do. It's hard for any of us to do when we're not getting the results we want. When you're getting great results, it's fun. But I think looking at things through objective reality, devoid of emotion, with logic and reason and critical thinking is number one. Number two, I would say educate yourself, because there's so much information that's dubious out there. And in our industry, the self-development industry, as wonderful as it is full of a lot of positive thinking platitudes and ideas that are more wishful thinking than they are critical thinking. And I think that's the only thing I would say about personal development that I don't enjoy, because I think you have to educate yourself and look at what really is true and do your research instead of just taking people's word for it, including my word for it. I mean, do your own research. And then I would say number three would be to inundate your consciousness with world-class thinking. Get around, inundate your consciousness, read books. You've written a couple of great books. I know other people have written great books. You know, go to their seminars, go to their programs, go to their speeches, inundate yourself with that world-class thinking, and it'll be amazing. I think you'll be amazed in how it starts to seep into your consciousness and the results follow.
So then, you know, no matter how much we train ourselves to be mentally tough, there are always going to be outside factors. So beyond associations, which are probably the biggest factor, talk about some of the other ones that bombard us and try to break our focus, bring us down. Talk about handling these outside factors.
Well, those certainly are, you know, elements. I think number one is it's kind of like, let me go back to Tiger Woods, because everyone sort of knows that story. I think when here's a guy who's, you know, been looked up to his whole life, and, you know, people said, I want my kid to be like the Tiger, and he is a national treasure at this point. Now he has this breakdown in his personal life and all the craziness that happened to him. And now all of a sudden everyone's looking at him and saying, I don't want you to be like Tiger. He's this, he's that, he's the other thing. And they're demonizing him. And people said, well, what, you know, when you say he's coming back, what's happening to him emotionally, mentally, and what is it going to take for him to get back? And it's really very simple. This is just a macro example, you know, on a big level, where I said very simple. We all get these times where we're emotionally overwhelmed, and mental toughness is really about, you know, again, about controlling and manipulating emotions. So Tiger is all of a sudden, he's got all these emotional forces coming in. He's emotionally overwhelmed. His focus is scattered all over the place. He's got everyone coming at him, and probably himself as well, his own thinking as well. And of course, what's the cure for emotional overwhelm? And it's compartmentalization. In other words, it's a big word, but it's a simple concept. Compartmentalization is the ability to compartmentalize, to put big things into tight, airtight compartments and focus on one single thing at a time until it's concluded, and then put that idea away and take one more idea and work on that idea. So you're not working on 10 things at one time. So you become overwhelmed. The idea is to break down overwhelm, make things simple, and get back on focus. So compartmentalization is one way. When things start coming at you in your daily life, you know, whether it's something like a Tiger Woods or something on a smaller, a micro level, compartmentalization really works. And I would say the second thing is one of the most liberating things I think anyone can do that really wants to perform at a world-class level, at any high level, and that's stop caring about what other people think of you. You know, they call this, of course, approval addiction, you know, and some psychologists say it's the most debilitating addiction beyond drugs or alcohol or sex or food or whatever, all the different addictions, they say, because you know, some people, most of us at some level are addicted to the approval of other people. And that puts you in bondage. It puts you in a state where you're doing things to, you know, please your parents or your kids or your wife or your husband or your friends or your family or your church or your country club people or, you know, your neighbors or whatever. And I think once you stop caring what people think, that's very liberating. You are now freed from the emotional and mental bondage that brings. So those are a couple of ideas right there.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. So then final question for you today, Steve. There's obviously a lot of things that we can do to embolden our mental toughness, but we certainly can't implement them all today. So as we finish our time, share the number one thing that we should do today to start building up our mental strength. If you were to focus us on one thing when this CD ends that we start applying to our life today, what would it be?
I would say take inventory of your life. Again, through objective reality, unemotional, through a critical thinking analysis, really look at your life and the things you care about. And I recommend that you use the standard psychological scale of 1 to 7. So say in my relationships, and you could break them all down one by one, that would probably be the best way. Say, you know, 1 is it's a terrible relationship, it's not going well, and 7 is it's going as well as it can go. Where do I fall on that 1 to 7 scale? And do it without emotion. Try to block your emotion out and just think through logic and results on what's actually happening in the real world, not wishful thinking, but critical thinking. It's not easy to do, but it's a phenomenal exercise. Now, once you do that, now you sort of have a roadmap. You've got a blueprint of what's actually happening in the real world, whether you like it or not, whether it's good or bad or in between. You've got a roadmap. Now you say, okay, what am I willing to do? If I'm at a 5, what am I willing to do to make it a 6 or a 7? Or am I willing to do anything? And then you look at that and then you move forward. I think that's really where, this is where we start with the biggest company. They, you know, the companies pay us millions of dollars a year just to start with this with their teams. And we break this down. And this is where the process begins. And anyone can really do this on an individual level. It's very beneficial.
Fantastic. Well, Mr. Steve Siebold, this has been great. Thank you for sharing your mental toughness with us and your insights on mental toughness with us here at Success. Thanks for being with us, Steve.
Thanks, Darren.
Success Audio Series, copyright Success Media, all rights reserved.